What's up, everybody? Mike Eshak and Lionel Dutton. We about to get this podcast started. We had to start it early because we just can't stop talking. So might as well just start it right now.
Public Yemeni number one.
We out here, motherfuckers. As always, don't forget to like, subscribe, hit the alert button so that you know I'm going live. Follow me, MikeFromDetroit.com. All my social media links are at the top. I'm Mike from Detroit on everything. TikTok, Instagram, YouPorn. I think I just made an account on Pornhub. Holler at your boy. Follow me. I'm not shooting porn. My guest today is a hilarious comedian, Lionel Dutton.
What up, what up, what up, Mike? Mike from Detroit. What up, Mike?
What up, cuz? What's cracking, man? We was having a really good discussion earlier, man. We were talking about a lot of things, and then I was like, bro, we got to save it for the podcast. And then we just started talking about more stuff, and I was like, we might as well just start this right now.
Fuck it, I came early, man.
Yeah, you did come early.
Right. Best time to be on time is to be early. That's what I was always taught, man.
I forgot what I said about that.
You said I make black people look good.
Yeah. Yeah, but when it comes to the time thing, man, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, last night we went to go see Steph's show. You know Steph, who runs Bandeira's,
mm-hmm.
who books for that?
Right.
Went to go see his show and everything. And, you know, on the flyer said 9:30.
Right.
And we get there. It probably didn't start till like 10:45.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how like Detroit shows are, man. I've been like, that. Like, hey, man, can you do my show? Like, sure, Clyde. I'll get there 8 o'clock.
I be forgetting. Sometimes I show up. I be like, oh, y'all ain't even set up yet. Yeah. I'll be back. I'm going to go sit in the car.
The last time I did a show in Detroit, man, mm-hmm. the guy said 8 o'clock, and then I forgot. You know how you forget? And I'm back in town, and then I go there at 8 o'clock, and I'm like, is there supposed to be a comedy show? And everybody there goes, I don't know. Okay, hold on a second. And then it ain't till like 8:45. The motherfucker who runs the show is walking in with the speakers. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Ain't even set up yet.
It's like a joke to people who are not black.
Man.
When the time says 8 o'clock, the joke's on the rest of us.
But you know what? Since I've been driving Lyft, man, white folks be late is a motherfucker too, man. You know?
That's like, not to say that, yeah.
Man, like, I'm
talking about Arabs are the same way.
Mm.
Same shit. So I'm not only, like, dogging on black people. I'm just like, brown people, we don't give a fuck about time that much.
We got our own time, man. It's weird. So that's why I was like, you know what? Let me chill. But I know when I'm working with whites and others, they start on time, you know, working at the comedy store.
Yeah.
If your spot is at 8:15,
yeah,
you better be ready.
Yeah. I love that.
You better be on that stage at 8:15.
You better be there at 8:15 ready to get on that stage.
Yeah, man. So sometimes I gotta like, when I'm doing certain shows, I'm like, all right, this is not like the comedy store. I gotta, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, I had to force myself because I mean, everyone in my family's late. I mean, the show that I went to go see Martin Amini's show at the Belly Room, you know, he attracts a lot of Latinos. Mm-hmm. Same shit, man, because the show started and there's only 15 people in the audience, but the show is supposed to be sold out.
Mm.
The fucking crowd didn't show up till like an hour later, you know what I mean? So, and I'm just like, yeah, bro, there's something about time where like white people typically are just like, they're more punctual with it, bro. The rest of us are like, man, that's white people shit.
Yeah, I like to be on time, man. I hate wasting. My thing is, I don't like wasting nobody time.
Yeah.
I hate wasting people time, man. I want to be on time and let's get it together. Let's get it going.
I think that same philosophy goes with comedy.
Yeah.
You don't want to waste the audience's time.
Nah,
even if you're not getting a laugh in this moment that you're explaining something,
mm-hmm.
That moment should still be so fucking interesting that you're not wasting their time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you know, sometimes they gotta wait for it.
That's fine. But my point is that you're still not wasting their time.
Right.
Because sometimes if you're making them wait for the laugh, but the wait ain't interesting or helps the laugh, that's wasting their time.
Well, yeah, but you also, you know, that's how you get strong, man. Sometimes they got to get their time wasted in order for the joke to work.
Oh, listen, I'm not talking about like when you're building new material. That's a different story.
Okay.
That's a different story, bro. I'm not talking about, like, if you're working on new material, man, that audience is just going to have to deal with whatever fucking moments that I'm trying to figure out, because I'm figuring this out right now.
Exactly.
Right? Yet at the same time, I'm talking about a finished product is what I'm saying. So let's say you're giving an audience a finished product. You're a show. People are coming to pay to see you. You know what I'm saying? And you're doing like a legit fucking show. I think that's a moment where you don't want to waste their time.
Nah, you don't want to waste their time at all. You just want to, you know, but like I said, sometimes you got to go for it. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you got to just go for it. You got to.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Take the chance.
Yeah, you got to take a chance,
because they might turn on you.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Sometimes it's good to have them turn on you.
I do.
And then see if you can get it back. That's the strength right there.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing my old head Sal said. You remember Sal Comedy?
Saul?
Sal. Sal's Comedy. Uh-uh. It was on Melrose.
Uh-uh.
It was a comedy spot on Melrose.
Sal's.
Sal's. Yeah, Sal's.
The pizza spot.
Pizza spot. Yeah. And when I first started doing comedy, he said, hey, sometimes you want to take the audience somewhere and have them turn on you and then see if you can get them back.
I agree.
That's the challenge.
That's the right majority. There. That's the majority of my set, bro. Really, if anything, man,
I see you,
my
man.
Favorite thing to do is some comics that say that they're too afraid to split the room.
Mm.
Right. I'm not afraid to split the room.
Right.
I love to say something that makes the room go, whoa. One side is for it, the other side's against it,
mm-hmm.
and then the punchline brings them back together.
Bring them back together. Now that's
to
art.
Me,
that's art.
That's what I try to do. But like I said, man, it's always you're always taking a chance, because there's sometimes where I'll do that, and it's hard to glue them back together after that. You know what I'm saying? So, mm-hmm. but that's the chance because for the times where it does work, man,
it's beautiful.
You struck a chord, bro. That was just like,
that's why I respect all comics that get out there and take a chance, man. Yeah. I respect that, man.
Me too, man. I think it's important. I think it's important to have uncomfortable, even certain failures happening in your set, because it sort of brings reality into it, you know. And then I find that, like, now that I'm fucking up, I'm getting the experience where even now while I'm fucking up, I'm very comfortable in it, and I'm still having a good time, and that's what brings the audience back. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. It's you're developing your craft, your gift. You know what I'm saying? You're taking a challenge on your creativity, and as you do it, then you'll find your kinks, and you know what I'm saying. You're figured out, and then that's what makes you.
Yeah,
that's what makes me by taking the chances, being true to your craft. So
stay closer to Mike.
Yeah. Just stand true to your craft. You know what I'm saying? So that's the beauty of it right there.
Yeah, I agree, man. But there are people out there that don't want to take chances, and they still do well. But I don't know if I enjoy the set as much as the people that are willing to just throw a curveball at the audience and have the audience go, "What the fuck?"
Right.
That's my fucking favorite. I've seen it happen
all the time, man. But hey,
I was competing at the Seattle comedy competition a couple months ago. This comic called his name is Chase DeRusso.
Okay,
bro, we were competing, and throughout the competition, we do different parts of the Washington area. So sometimes we're like, everyone's in trailer parks. Then we go to like a place where it's just like, you know, middle class people. This room that we were doing was like rich, high tier, eyes wide shut, fucking rich as fuck. The black people in this room have white guilt rich. You know what I'm saying? Like super fucking rich. And this motherfucker, man, turned on the house lights. Just went out in the crowd, started roasting everybody, roasting. And bro, it was me watching the competition. It was like, I'll never forget this moment. He was so in the moment. He's a black guy. He's ripping on all these fucking rich white people. And there was they have their symbol of their group, right? Whatever this rich group club is, their symbols on the wall and in the thing. And he's like, "Come on, man, your hair is this, your hair is that. There's a Nazi sign on the fucking wall." And oh my God, he just started tearing in their asses.
It was like a Bill Burr joint when he did it in Philly.
Bro, I'm telling you, I can't even tell you how amazing it was for me to watch that, bro. He lost. They voted him. They didn't
get him out of there
for sure. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But he had the people that were laughing in that room. The people that were laughing in that room were laughing so fucking hard. I'm talking about because we were all witnessing him lose the competition, but win it for comedy. Does that make sense?
Right, right.
And those are the fucking moments I love too, man. Like anybody who can do something like that, to me, I'm just like, that is fucking amazing, man.
Right, 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 right.
You took it too far. You knew you took it too far and you kept it going.
Kept going.
He was just, fucking love it.
He was just true to his craft, man, you know? So
yeah,
that's comedy, man. You gotta be, gotta stay true to it, man.
So what do you do to prepare to do comedy? Like, what do you, like when it comes to writing, like what's your writing style? Like, do you write the shit down?
I write, like when I'm on, when I'm in the beach, like, cause I like to roller skate, man. When I be at the beach, I be skating and it's, it should come to me.
I keep forgetting you roller skate.
Yeah, I roller skate, man. You know, it come to me. And sometimes I stop because, you know, when you're a comic, when you get like a moment,
bro,
if you don't stop and write it down, you can forget.
It's going to be gone.
It's going to be gone. So that happened to you before, right?
Of course, bro.
Yeah, man. So it's been times where I was like, yo, no, I'm gonna stop, and I'll just jot it down. And I'm like, okay. So, or when I'm in the shower, stuff come to me in the shower. I got so many videos of, sometimes I go in the shower and I just push record. So all you hear is water, and you just hear me telling jokes and shit. So that's where my creativity come from.
Mm.
So
that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of creativity does come from, doing nothing. Like, so for example, I'm the same way. Like, to me, shit comes to me when I'm driving or when I'm doing shit like the dishes.
Okay.
Or like doing chores and I'm listening to some song or a podcast and then I'm not listening to the podcast, but it's playing there and I'm doing the work. And then all of a sudden, boom, an idea will just hit me.
Hit right there.
And then I got to stop doing what I'm doing.
Don't it feel golden though? Don't it feel, especially when you know this shit funny?
Bro.
It's like a moment. You're like, bro, yo, this shit is, I'm a killing with this one.
Bro.
Yeah. It got to be funny to me first.
There's a book called, you know, there's that famous book called The Art of War.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Well, there's another book that a creative guy, a writer wrote called The War of Art.
Mm.
It's a very good book, bro.
Okay, I'm going to check it out.
Stephen Pressfield.
Okay.
Excellent book, man. And in that, he talks about everything that we were just talking about, but he calls it the muse. He says he believes the muse is this, well, like in fables, the muse was the goddess of creativity, right? Yeah. And she was supposed to be the reason that you get inspired, right? And the way he talks about the muse is, he's like, you have to invite her in. You have to invite her in. Like, if you talk to a lot of artists, man, they'll tell you they don't know where these ideas come from.
Right.
Sometimes it comes from past experiences, right? But sometimes you'll get an idea and it's almost like some spirit from another dimension just said, just
drop it on you.
Hey, I'm here to, you know, I'm going to whisper this. Right. I think there's also Beethoven had this quote. He said that, the spirits in the ether are playing amazing music, right? But it's only to the ones that are able to listen to it. It's almost as if like there's all this creativity up in the atmosphere, right? And only a few people can hear that one note that comes down from there.
Mm.
Do you feel like that the creativity comes like in that way, or do you feel like it's more you generating it?
I think it's both. It's both. I get, because once it comes to me, I know it's like, oh, that came from the higher up. That was a spirit, right? That was a moment. I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to add this, or if I add this to that. So yeah, man, I remember I came up, I was like, yo, true story. Like, it's like, yo, this can be a real, this, I'm quite sure this happened to somebody. You know, it's like, you know, get invited to a swinger party in Hollywood. And you think you're going to a swinger party and you in there with the girl, you doing your shit. Then the motherfucker husband, he come home swinging. I'm like, hold up, man. This ain't the type of party. I thought this was a swing. I'm going to swing on you, motherfucker. Get off my goddamn. You told me this was a swinger party. I mean, that shit real, man.
That was a real story.
That shit real, man. I'm like,
that's hilarious.
You know, it's like, so when you ask,
that's the wrong type of swinger
that's
party,
the wrong
bro.
Type of swinger party, man. Man, I thought this come was on, a man. Swinger party, man. I'm gonna swing on you, and you know when a husband hits you, he's swinging hard too. He's trying to kill you. I'm up.
You surprised? I'm just. You're glad he didn't come in with a weapon,
bro. Right? Right. So yeah, you know, just so the funniness come from. I really, you know what? The funniness come from when you're really at peace. For me, it comes from when I'm really at peace.
That's a very good point, man.
When I'm really at peace with the universe, one with nature. When you're like at peace with, I remember when I was in acting class, right? When the class is over every weekend, every Friday, the teachers used to say, "Hey, go be one with nature."
Yeah.
So when I'm one with nature, I'm like, yo, that's where a lot of creativity's flow, man.
I think that's interesting that you say peace. I think that's a very good point, man. Cause I think there's something about when you let your subconscious mind go on autopilot. Does that make sense? You know that there's the part of your brain that you actually think with. You're like your executive function, like the you know, where you make decisions or whatever, right?
Right.
But then sometimes if you turn that off, your subconscious mind now, the other part of your brain starts kicking in. And I think that's where my ideas come from. I think a lot of artists, that's where their ideas come from. But I think you're right. It's if you are at peace, are you actually comfortable enough to let go, and your mind is now just
allow to flow,
just out there grabbing shit out
of the ether, man. Yeah, yeah, that's how I look at it. Just grabbing stuff. Just, you know, you're not basically you're shutting your brain down for a little bit. And
you're shutting down the thinking executive functional part of your brain. Yeah,
right. This is dope. I ain't even had no weed yet, man. So this conversation is dope, right? This is real, man.
It's very interesting that you said peace. I think peace was a very, very good, another good way of putting it, because any other times that I thought about an idea, I was in like an amazing form of peace, whether I was driving. And sometimes when I'm driving, you know, you'd be doing these road gigs. Sometimes you'd be driving with no traffic for hours, right? Because you're out in the middle of nowhere. You're driving from here to Las Vegas, you're going to end up going through the desert where there's no fucking life, right?
Right.
So all you're seeing is the same shit over and over, and you're listening to a song and there's really nothing to worry about, right? There's no brakes that you need to press. You can put it on cruise control. Sometimes that's when my ideas come.
Start and the flow. Thing, you're at peace.
When I'm at peace.
Yeah, man.
It's a very good point. I don't think anybody's writing jokes while they're getting droned.
No,
you know what I'm saying? Nobody's writing a joke when a gun gets pulled over on their fucking face, because now you're not grabbing shit from the ether. You're thinking about, how do I survive this moment, or how do I have to get out of my car and beat the shit out of this guy who doesn't know how to drive?
I remember a guy pulled a gun on me back in Philly.
Damn.
But I knew the guy, but he didn't.
That makes a difference.
But he didn't know that I knew him.
Was he a crackhead?
No, he was a stick-up boy. He was a stick-up boy. And I felt myself having a conversation with him with the gun pointed at me. I'm like, man, I know you, man. Said, what you mean you know me? I said, I know your mama. Don't you live around the corner, man? He's like, the next thing you know, somebody came down running. He had a lookout guy. And the lookout guy came down running. The lookout guy recognized me. And he was like, hey, man, that's the young boy from Philly. No, he cool. And I was like, damn. That was, he saved my life. Now, both of them dead now. That's crazy. They both gone now.
What the fuck?
Right.
So how did the other guy save your life?
By running down the street and he recognized me. So basically it was like, guy walked up to me, he's like, yo, you got the time? And I was like, nah. And then he pulled the gun out. He's like, you know what time it is.
Oh, man.
And then I was like, oh, shit. But then I recognized him and I told him who he was. But he had a lookout guy that was watching his back.
Oh.
So his lookout guy was at the corner.
Oh, shit.
But his lookout guy recognized me. Then he came down. It was like, nah, that's the young boy.
And he defused it.
Defused the situation.
Damn.
Yeah, right.
What the fuck?
But both of those guys dead now, so that's crazy.
Do you know how they died?
Guns.
Did they shoot each other?
Nah, they didn't shoot. That's crazy.
But in a movie, that's how it
right,
would be.
In a movie, that's how it would be, movie, right?
Those guys would end up shooting each other.
Crazy. Philly was rough, man. Rough streets, man.
Did you like growing up in Philly? Or did you fucking hate it?
You know what? I did. I hated my conditions.
Yeah.
But I did like growing up there because I played a lot of basketball and, you know, that's where my comedy come from. Most of my comedy come from growing up in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
So the conditions, yeah, I hated the fucking conditions. But I used my humor to kind of like get out of that shit. Like in high school, I hung out with all the tough guys in high school. You know, it was like, you wanted to fight me, you had to fight Ray Ray, you had to fight Black, you had to fight everybody else. You weren't just gonna fight me.
Yeah, I was the same way.
Yeah, I go right there. So, yo, he said he wanna fight us. He's like, no, he wanna just fight you. No. Mm. Yeah. So
like you used comedy? You were always the funny guy?
I was always trying to be the funny guy. I wasn't trying to be the funny guy. It was just like, hey, it was a gift. Like I said before, I was doing stand up comedy. I didn't know I was doing stand up comedy. You know, it was just like, it was just a gift.
Yeah.
You know?
Anybody in your family funny?
Yeah, man. I got an uncle named Ricky, man. And I used to hate going. Uncle Rick, he was gay, but he acted like he wasn't gay.
Of course, because he was black in the hood.
You know?
You had to be, right?
No. Well, he was proud of it.
Right.
He was proud. He had a Jerry curl and a Coca-Cola shirt and some Stone Water.
He never changed the shirt?
He always had that Coca-Cola shirt. It was clean, though. It was clean as shit.
He'd wash it every day.
Stone Water jeans on. And Uncle Rick can skate. He's a skater. But I didn't like going skating with him because you know how the neighborhood, all the kids just talk about you and shit. Like, oh, your uncle. But I love my uncle.
Yeah.
But only, when we just go skating, right? He always skated backwards. He never turned around. Uncle Rick always, and his favorite song was Whitney Houston shit. He fills me up. I'm like, hold on, Uncle Rick, man. So Uncle Rick, I love Uncle Rick, man. I just hated going skating with him because I always get teased and shit.
Yeah. But he was too flamboyant.
He was very flamboyant.
Yeah.
But it was just like.
But he was trying not to be gay.
No, he wasn't trying to be. He wasn't trying not to be. It was just like you never seen him with no boys in the neighborhood. You never seen none of that. You know, he was just. But he was cool as shit, man.
Yeah.
And he always called me nigga. That's all he said. Like nigga, you better get in the car. Yeah. So Uncle Rick, I love Uncle Rick, man. That's how I learned how to skate.
That's what I kind of figured.
Uncle Rick turned me how to skate, man.
The fact that you know how to. Why don't you explain to us how did you get into skating, and we'll do it with some music.
What you mean? All right, skate off this music, nigga. What the fuck? What's this, Beethoven?
I don't know what this is.
Yo, Mike is high as a motherfucker right now.
Yeah.
This nigga had mushrooms.
What's cracking? No, I didn't have no mushrooms. Not yet. Not yet. We can have some.
No, I'm good, man. Okay, I got to dry out of here. Where did you go with this, man?
I don't know.
Mike just went somewhere. I don't know where you went at.
I was just trying to change it up, bro. So roller skating.
Yeah, skating was just like, we don't skate on this, Mike. You need some motherfucker, some hip hop, man. What the hell? Mike is high, man.
But I mean, come on, man.
Mike, we don't skate off this, man.
This is you're telling a story, you're not
this
skating.
This is the music in the dentist's office, man. But it's kind of dope, though, right?
It does feel like we're in a dentist's office.
Yeah, this is dope.
You can tell a story in a dentist's office,
man.
They'll let you do that.
I don't think we.
You can do that.
Philly folks don't skate off this, though.
Man, Philly folks are too serious.
Yeah, we so serious. Detroit motherfuckers are serious.
Nah.
What? Detroit the first. Y'all the first one that made the slogan Detroit versus everybody.
We didn't make it. Some guy made it.
I ain't see nobody wear that. The first people.
Some guy
in
Detroit made that.
That's what I'm saying. Right. So I never see nobody
else
wear
that. Because everybody don't. Because you know Detroit don't get no love. So it was like Detroit versus
Detroit get all the love
now. Man. For a minute we weren't, man. For a minute we were very neglected. We weren't in no movies. You didn't see us anywhere.
8 Mile.
That's I'm talking about before 8 Mile. Before 8 Mile, man.
Crazy. You got the Detroit only, always been on fire, bro. Y'all, Detroit.
Yeah, legit on fire. Like, everything was burning the fuck up, bro. No,
but what I'm saying, Detroit, y'all had Motown, bro. Everybody came out of Motown.
With the music?
Yes.
Yeah, but that left. And then in the 80s, it was just, you know.
Well, everybody get their moments, but Detroit. And 90s. Bro, Detroit, man.
Detroit used to be a thing in the early 1900s. In the early 1900s, it was one of the richest places in America.
Man, y'all got motherfucking Eminem. Eminem was, when Eminem came out, bro.
That's what I'm saying. Eminem kind of put Detroit on the map. That was the first time Detroit started popping off on the map.
Motown put Detroit on the map, bro.
Motown is a different generation, bro. You're talking about something that happened in the late 60s and 70s.
But it still count, though. And listen.
Yeah, but I mean.
Listen, what I'm saying. A lot of this music today.
Yeah.
They ain't do nothing but sample stuff from Motown.
Yeah, I know, man.
Right.
But that's, you know, I mean, for the most part, Detroit was neglected, man. Mm. Just neglected, like, you know, really neglected. And
Detroit Pistons, where you're Bad Boys?
Oh, yeah. Bad Boy era.
That was an era, bro.
That was an era, bro. I that's when I was still watching sports. I stopped watching sports after I threw two TVs off the balcony one day.
What, watching the Pistons?
I think it was either watching the Lions or it was probably, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, the Lions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have broke the damn whole fucking stereo. Yeah,
bro, I threw my TV off the balcony, and then my next door neighbor in the barracks, he's like, "Hey, man, you know," he's like, "I already bought a new TV. My old TV is in my closet." He goes, "You can borrow that, and then, you know, give it back to me when you get a new TV." I was like, "All right." And then, not even 2 hours after that, I threw his TV off the balcony.
Damn for the Lions.
It was either the Lions or it was playing NBA Live. I think I might have been playing NBA Live.
Okay, you was okay.
Because I remember I got really pissed off because this kid didn't even know how to play. He was like a Mormon kid, and then he
you can hear me. You can hear me, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
You know, but anyways, the whole point with the fucking sports thing, man. Yo, the Bad Boys, man. That was shit, man.
I used to love that.
But I want to talk about you roller skating, bro.
This nigga back on skating, man.
Come on, man.
Nah, we not doing that, man. Nigga, switch it up, nigga. He talk roller skating.
We're comedians. You can't.
I don't skate on this, bro. Listen.
Okay, say what does this inspire you to say to the people?
What, this music right here?
Yeah.
This shit feel like I'm about to get a massage, man.
Ooh.
This massage music, right?
A mama-san massage?
This nigga, it's crazy, man.
Damn, bro. You mad at me like last time?
Nah, I'm good, bro. It's all love.
Remember when I said on Justin Hire's podcast?
Yeah.
You were talking about Philly girls, and then I was like, yeah, Philly girls are grizzled.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. I don't understand that word. Why do you think that, though, bro? I don't know what the fuck that mean. What that mean?
Grizzled is typically a word that you use for like an older man, right? Grizzled means streaked with white hair, right? But it's also kind of used as not necessarily just only an older man that looks distinguished with white hair.
So are you calling Philly girls men?
No, but like I'm using it in like I would say like some women in Detroit are grizzled, you know, weathered. You know,
have you ever been to Philly?
They've been through the ringer.
Have you ever been to Philly?
Yeah.
Like when? Like what you do there?
Not too long ago. I was just there.
Have you ever like spent time in Philly though? Like really, I ain't talking about just going to do a show for like an hour or two and leave. Have you ever like really been to the city?
Nah.
So how can you call Philly girl grizzles, motherfucker? And you ain't never took time out to meet a Philly. Have you ever met a Philly girl, nigga?
Maybe.
See? That's the shit I'm talking about, America. Motherfuckers be coming up with their own views and their own damn opinions and ain't never been to Philly.
It's so funny. Like, you made me realize. I'm like,
That shit, you never even date. You probably never even talked to a black girl in Philly.
I don't talk to black people.
Bro. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, this the world we living in, y'all. Motherfuckers do anything to get fucking.
Bro, we're comedians.
Fuck that.
Fucking around.
No, but I'm just saying, because it's, you know, I got to see how you feel about Philly girls.
Like, no, man.
That's like me going to say something about Detroit girls. Detroit girls, fine as shit.
Bro,
man.
Detroit girls are some fine Detroit
Philly
girls.
Philly girls is beautiful.
But there's also some Detroit girls where you're just like, yes.
Of quite sure. Yeah.
Bruh.
But I think that.
Your clothes
I think,
are too tight.
I think she go to Philly, man. You know, girls, man, Philly's amazing, man.
You know what I love? I love how, like, people will get mad if you talk about women in their city.
You motherfucking right, nigga. That shit. Nigga, listen, Philly girl will fight you, nigga, over that, man.
That's
you,
grizzled shit.
Nigga, a grizzled ass whooping, motherfucker. Yeah, man. Nah, man, we'll play that, nigga. Nigga. That's real, man. Those girls out there can fight, nigga.
Yeah. So, roller skating.
What about it?
I'm not going to play the music.
No, I'm listening. What about it?
I just want to know more. Like, to me, it's like amazing. Like I was just telling you earlier, I was like, you should do that we should see videos of you roller skating.
But here's the thing, though. I don't skate for, it's my peace.
Yeah, yeah. It's my
therapy.
It's your meditation.
Yeah, yeah. It's my, I'm not like, hey, yo, look at me, I'm skating. That's like, that gives me a skating. But at the beach, give him my peace, because you got to have some peace when you're dealing in Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you got to have somewhere you can go and just like clear your mind. And like for I real. Said, when I go skating, that's where I get my creativity from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I usually don't bring nobody with me because you don't need no distractions. I'm quite sure you do stuff that, you know, you don't bring nobody with you. You just you need that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I'll go on hikes. I'll go... I used to surf, but then, you know, I'm not doing that no more.
Mm.
Snowboarding. But I mean, I can't do that like right off the jump. Sometimes just going to the beach, man. That's just all I need.
I tried hiking. I went, girl invited me to go hiking at, what's that over here?
Runyon. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, it was my first time there.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that we just going, I think it was just a little date. We just going to walk around a little park. Just had me. This shit felt like I was trying out for American Ninja. Yeah. I'm like, what party game is this? I'm like, you should have told me that I was trying out for the X Games.
You should have told me I needed to warm up and stretch.
Right. I'm like, we climbing. She said, okay, we're going to take the mountain. Oh, we're going to do the hardest thing. Then you don't want to be no pussy. You're like, I deal with you. I'm swear. You all right? Yeah, I'm good. Go ahead.
Oh, she took you on the steep side.
Yeah, I did the my first time there.
The stairs to heaven.
That's where we went. I went to we did the hardest shit.
People
man.
Call us the stairs to hell, actually.
I never called
with the
her,
logs.
I never called her again.
With the logs.
Yeah, I'm dogs running up beside me and shit.
Oh,
man.
Yeah.
Like, you know what, man? I did not sign up for this. I just wanted to go get some Starbucks. Yeah, man. A little conversation. I was like, nah, I ain't been back.
Nope. That did it?
That did it. I didn't because I wasn't prepared for that. You can't just take somebody on some ninja shit.
Sure, you can't. I mean, that was kind of a troll.
Yeah, that was.
Because, you know, there was an actual easier, more longer route.
Right.
She probably took you down on that.
Yeah.
Or did she make you go down on the fucking logs again, too?
Did we go down? No, I think we walked down. I didn't go back the way I came up.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't doing that.
And then so.
Yeah, we walked around and I make sure we walked all around. We walked down.
And then you walked down, right.
Yeah.
You did the long route down.
Got in my car, didn't say bye.
she must have not been a bad bitch or something.
She was cute. She was
cute, right?
She was cute.
But it was not. She was cute. Not enough to call her back after putting you through hell.
Nah, I was disappointed, man. I was disappointed. She been calling me. And I'm like, nah, man, I ain't fuck with you no more, man. Nah, man.
Yeah, man. Finding that peace in roller skating. Like, yeah, you say you don't do it for anybody. You just do it for yourself. You almost don't even want people to be watching you. You don't even.
Yeah, I just
care.
Be in the zone, man. You gotta keep something to yourself, man. You gotta break away. You know, so that gives me the opportunity to really like break away from Hollywood.
That's so funny. I look at you. I would never think that you'd be roller skating.
Yeah, a lot of people.
But it's because you had a gay uncle.
No, that's not because of that. It's because of when you grow up in a hood, you need to. That kept me off the street.
That's great.
Yeah. You know, it's like the safest places to be in a hood is the library and the skating rink.
Right.
Ain't never been no problems at no library.
Right.
You ever see anybody got shot at the library? Tyrone got shot at the library. Ain't nobody getting shot at the library. That's
right.
The safest place ever. So.
Damn.
So I really, you know, so yeah, so that kind of skating, those 2-3 hours means a lot in the hood, man. If you can escape the hood for that, for like four to five hours, that's a good day.
Yeah, bro.
That's a good day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Skating did it to me. That skating did it, really did it
for How old were you when you found when you stumbled on it?
I was like probably like, cuz I had another uncle. He worked at a skate rink too, Uncle Pete. So, I probably was like
He worked at a skating rink?
10. Yeah, I was probably like 10.
He worked at a skating rink.
Yeah.
Damn, so you were just surrounded by that shit.
Yeah, man, I was just in it, man. I just had that.
Can you do moves?
Little spin moves.
You can do spins and do all that shit.
You can do all that shit. Yeah, but not like
you can like.
Flow, I ain't like roll bounce, but I can you know.
What's roll bounce?
Roll bounce. You ain't see that movie?
No.
You gotta get your black card up, man. You can't be calling black women grizzlies, man. You gotta get your black card up.
I didn't say black women. I said Philly women.
Philly women. Okay, all right, my man.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I say women in general. Mm. Without even going there. And I just made a generalization of
this motherfucker. Yeah. You say that shit on stage, the crowd gonna go, whew.
Yeah. To me, I find that shit fascinating, bro. You know? Mm. How old were you? Like what?
10.
Damn.
10 years old, man. 10 years old. So I was selling crack, I was skating, and I was fucking crackheads, man. I was a triple threat.
So tell me about that.
You're taking a triple threat.
Because I remember we were talking about Justin Hires thing. I think like you said you busted your first nut at like 11 or some shit.
I was like 10.
Damn.
10.
10 years old.
10 years old, man. It was rough. It was 10 years old. I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, but I mean at 10 you didn't bust anything, really.
Nah, I peed in. I was the first.
That's thing. Right. That's what you said.
I peed, man.
Why did you pee?
Nigga, I didn't know.
You don't even know.
I'm 10 years old. I didn't know what I was doing. 10 years old, man. The dude I was working for, he was 14. My boss was 14, man. So it was just
that's
like,
right. I remember saying that. Yeah. Your boss was 14.
Yeah, he was 14. Meek, what's up, Meek? We here now.
And his boss was like what?
It's probably
his 14
boss,
and a half?
Yeah, his boss was probably like 16, you know? And, you know, it was rough. Back in the 90s, the Phillies was different, bro.
Yeah.
Like, and then I sit back and think about it. I was like, the 90s in Philly? I so crack, and I'm not glorifying none of this shit, man. You know, just like this is, it was terrible.
Yeah.
And selling crack at 10 years old.
Right.
And my best customer was my aunt. Aunt Trudine. Aunt True was a functional crackhead though. Aunt True was just like, she was so happy. She was never mad. She was always loving. And she was fly too. That's the only person I know that can smoke crack and still be fly.
Some people can do it.
Uncle Aunt True had a Jerry Curl and a leather jacket. She was fucking Shaft and Eazy-E. I swear to God, Aunt True was fly, man.
That's hilarious.
I love Aunt True, man. She practically took care of me.
Yeah.
And when I tell you, Aunt True is come on the block and she'd be like, I don't want nobody shit but my nephews. I don't want nobody shit but my nephew. They'd be like, who your nephew? Lionel Dalton. True, I'm going to go to jail.
Yeah, yeah.
Said my whole fucking government.
Did you have a street name?
Nah, I had no street name.
You had no street name?
I had no street name. By the time I really realized what I was doing was wrong,
yeah,
a couple of my mentors, they took me off the street and they put me in a barbershop. And then I was in a barbershop. Because they was like, yo, man, we see something else in you, man.
Mm.
Just sweep up this barbershop. So I was that kid. I don't know how y'all got in Detroit. Do y'all got like barbershops in Detroit where little boys is actually cleaning up the barbershop?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I was that kid growing up in Philly. And I was sweeping hair in a barbershop. And that's... I learned a lot from that. Yeah, that was
crazy. So the guy that managed you getting... doing the crack stuff.
Right.
He looked at you and was like, yo, you don't belong out here.
Nah, not him.
Who?
Older guy. Like an older mentor, like somebody from the neighborhood.
Oh, he wasn't a drug dealer.
No, he wasn't a drug
dealer. He was just somebody's like, I'm gonna give you a job.
He was somebody who was like, yo, you need to get off that corner. It's interesting. That's because really you nice. Because you can find little boys from
you
the
remember
hood.
His name?
Yeah, his name is Joe. Yo, Joe, rest in peace. He's dead right now. Joe, rest in peace, man, my guy. It's guys in the hood. It's little kids in the hood that you can just see.
Yeah.
And you be like, yo.
Yeah.
I see something in you.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is not it.
Yeah. For real.
So, and there's a couple guys like, yo, I got one guy named Antar.
Because he could tell. He probably looked at you and was like, you're a good kid. You're smart. You're talented.
Yeah. You know, and he was like.
You have potential.
And it was another guy, because I dropped out of high school, and I was working in a barbershop, and it was some guys in a barbershop. They didn't really care that I dropped out of high school.
Mm.
So I'm a kid. I'm in a barbershop during the day where I'm supposed to be in school.
Yeah.
And this one guy named Antar, called Ant Lutlow, and he's a come in a barbershop, and he's a see me. He's like, man, you need to take your ass to school. I don't care what's, you need to take your ass to school. And I was like, I used to hate when he came in the barbershop because he's always telling me that shit. Then eventually I went back to school, got my diploma. And then when I moved to LA, same guy was like, man, you better do some motherfucking comedy. You funny as shit. You better do some stand-up comedy. He's like, if you scared, get a dog. That's how Philly folks talk to you. They talk to you. It's tough love, man. It's you good, scared, man. Get a dog.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I was scared. So I'm like, man, I ain't doing no comedy, man. Then I did open mic. I did my first open mic at the Comedy Store. And it's kind of interesting. The first time I did comedy was at the Comedy Store.
Wow. That was your first time ever.
First time ever.
Professionally? Or is it your first open mic?
Open mic.
So you went, there was an open mic at the Comedy Store, or you did potluck?
Did potluck.
First, you got put on the list first day there?
No. What happened was, I was just cool with the booker named Tommy. His name was Tommy. And
this is back in the day.
Back in the day. A lot of guys didn't like Tommy.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people didn't like him.
But Tommy showed love to me.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Sometimes, you know, people energy is different. He showed love to me. And he's like, you know what? I like you, man. Come by Monday. And I went by Monday, and I did stand up first time.
3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Potluck.
Original room. But I was so nervous.
Yeah.
I didn't even know where the light was at.
You blew the light?
I was on stage for 6 minutes.
You didn't even know what the light was?
No.
Because it's all the way. Was it still to your left?
It's still to your left.
The star?
But just imagine the first time you get on stage. A real show. This is a live show. And the audience is laughing. My first laugh, I was like, yo, this shit is actually happened.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Yeah.
And I was so nervous where I was afraid to even look for a motherfucker light. So Tommy was like, yo, what you doing, man? You ain't supposed to be on that long. I was like, yo, I ain't know, man. I was nervous. I ain't know where that light was at. But because I was getting laughter, he thought that I was running the light, which I wasn't, because I just didn't know where the light was at.
You didn't know what was what?
No, I didn't know what was what.
So this is your first time on stage ever?
Ever.
So you didn't even try doing an open mic before doing potluck?
No.
You just kept showing up to potluck.
Exactly.
And not getting it.
Right.
And then showing up again.
Exactly.
Why did you choose potluck of all the things and not go to an open mic?
Because I didn't know anything about an open mic.
Ah, yeah, okay. That's funny. You just went straight to the Comedy Store.
Straight to the Comedy Store.
That's funny.
I didn't know.
How many weeks until you finally got on potluck? How many times did you show up until you finally got up?
It didn't take me that long. And it didn't take. I went up there. I met my boy named Quincy, and it was at Jamar Neighbors. Remember Jamar?
Quincy Weekly.
Yeah, Quincy Weekly. Jamar Neighbors. They was door guys. They was working at the back.
Yeah.
And I was just kicking it with him. We just kicking whatever. Said, yeah, come on up on Monday. Whatever. And I came up and I met the guy, and let's say probably like twice.
Damn. And then you got up.
I got up.
Oh, that's fucking amazing.
Yeah, I got up.
And then that gave you like the confidence to keep doing it.
That gave me the confidence to keep doing it. Then next thing, you know, I start going to the haha. And then
what year was this when you first started?
This had to be 2010.
Damn.
This is 2010.
Okay.
Yeah. 2010 at the haha.
Damn. So you started 2010.
Yeah. When you start?
2017.
Okay.
I just hit 6 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. That's dope, man. Yeah, yeah. So next thing you know, I just started. Then you know, flappers. Then you find out the website Bad Slava.
Yeah, Bad Slava. You know that?
Yeah,
yeah,
man. Bad Slava.
Still people still use
it. Still people still use that.
Yeah,
yeah. And
Comedy Bureau. That's the one that really popped off when I was around.
Marty's.
Marty's, bro. I miss Marty's so much. I got a Marty's T-shirt and everything.
Marty's.
Bro.
Marty's was dope.
Man. Marty's was dope because we were. It was like a clubhouse where people would hang out, and then like. You could workshop. Remember, we had that small room on the side?
Right there. That was my favorite room.
That room, you would go in there, man.
Yeah.
And all these old heads or even some young comics would just be sitting there rolling joints, just talking. Right. And then you would just try to do your bit.
Right.
And then they would be like, hey, if you try doing this, people just give you ideas.
Yeah, that's how comedy really works, though, man. It worked like that. That's how it's supposed to work. That's
how it is supposed to work.
You know, if
some of my bits have become so good because I was able to bounce it off other comics. Right.
So, like, if you had a show and I come see your show and you go on stage and you're doing something, and if something click in my mind that will help your act,
yeah,
I'm supposed to tell you.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, like, yo.
And it might not resonate with me, or it might.
Right.
That's the whole point. The whole point is you give it to me anyway.
To be open to receive it.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, I'm not telling you what to do, but I think if you add this, this might take this joke over here.
I am always open to other people's suggestions, man. Always. Mm. And I would say that maybe only 5 to 10%, maybe less, actually made it into my set or made me think differently and helped.
Right.
But that they helped so much. So if you're not open to everything, you know, you're gonna fuck yourself, you know.
I think
to me, I'm very open to anybody's if they have something that they have a constructive criticism for, I'm open to listening to it.
Yeah, that's how you grow, man. You know, that's how I look at it. That's how you grow.
But I want to go back to this whole time in Philly. So you was like 10 years old,
right?
You was fucking like just selling crack and roller skating, and then this guy comes along and,
right,
and basically he gets you off the street, or he told you, or he just like inspired you to do it.
What, comedy?
No, to get off the street.
Oh, to sweep hair in the barbershop.
Yeah.
No, it was just, yeah.
He connected you with the barbershop?
Yeah, well, he didn't connect me with it. Another guy was like, yo, my homeboy Eddie Stu, he was like, yo, you need to come here. Because the barbershop was like a hangout spot. So when we finish hustling, we go to the barbershop and we just go hang out and play some pool and have a good time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it was like, yo, you should sweep hair in the barbershop. And I was like, you know what? If this going to stop me from going to jail.
You never been to jail?
Nah, man.
Damn.
No. Well, I've been locked up before. Well, yeah, well, like, yeah, I don't think that's, you know, I've never been like.
Yeah, you've been locked up for a night or something like that, or.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, yeah, we've been like on a you know, holding cell, some shit like that, but
hold what?
Holding cell.
Exactly. I've been a holding cell.
Yeah, yeah, like a holding cell where when I realized it wasn't for me because we all go to jail together.
Yeah.
And then I'm always the last one to leave. I'm like, nah, man, this shit. Like, what up, man? Where everybody going, man? My mom ain't come get me yet. Like, yeah, that shit was fucked up. Damn, so yeah, bro. So I got locked, matter of fact. I got caught one time doing some shit, and I was like, you know what? Nah, this ain't my life, man. I went, nah, I'm good. I'm gonna find something else to do. Yeah, so I started cutting hair.
At the barbershop?
Yeah, man. I started sweeping hair, because here's the thing, when you sweeping hair up, you getting older now. So guys is trying to tell you what to do, and you're like, yo, I'm like 16 now. Y'all not gonna keep talking to me crazy like this. You know, I fight all y'all motherfuckers in here. So then I was like, you know what? Okay, you gotta make a transition. So the transition was, I'm not going to store for y'all no more. I'm not sweeping hair up no more. So what you gonna do? Well, fuck it, I'm gonna do what y'all do. I'm gonna learn how to cut hair. That was one of the worst things ever, bro.
Yeah. Why?
Now you trying to cut some hair.
Yeah.
In a barbershop, in a black barbershop.
Oh my God.
And you don't know how to cut.
Oh no.
Man.
They just let you do it?
Yeah.
They didn't send you to school or anything?
No, man. Because in the hood, people want entertainment, man. When you fuck up, that's entertainment.
Sure.
So people will come to the barbershop on the weekends just to see me fuck people up.
But if everybody know you fucking people up, why
everybody
they keep coming to you?
Everybody don't know.
Yeah.
That's where it's called walk-ins. You ever been going to a barbershop?
Yeah, I remember the walk-ins.
Yeah, the walk-ins. Yeah. Like, walk-ins. Don't never,
there's no appointments.
The guy that don't never sit in the first chair. The first chair guy gonna rip you up.
Yeah.
I was the first chair guy.
Yeah.
And when I tell you, they come in a barbershop and it was just like, oh shit. You start, when you fuck somebody up, you start sweating.
Damn.
You don't want them to see the mirror. You're like, hold on. No, I got you, man. Don't look yet. I got you. You know, so yeah, that was
fade becomes a mohawk.
Exactly. I was the first one doing mohawks, man. One time I had to fight a dude. I had to fight a motherfucker because I fucked his hair up.
Did you ever fuck up the hair of anybody who's like a gang member or anything like that?
No, this dude was a hood dude, man. He was like, I fucked him up. I messed his hair up. And the guy fixed it. They fixed his hair. But
the hood is so messy at times where I'm in the back, I'm shooting pool, minding my business. The guy get his hair fixed. He's walking out. The shop is packed. All black niggas. The shop is packed. He's walking out. All right, thank you, man. I appreciate you fixing it for me. Thank you, man. He's walking out. One guy in the back say, yo, man, don't be back here telling me you fucked the boy haircut up. Tell him. So the guy turns around and looks at me. Like, damn, young boy, you back there talking shit. I ain't say nothing.
But somebody else said something.
Yeah.
And what did they say?
They said, don't be back here talking shit about how you fucked his hair up. Tell him.
He was saying that to you?
He was saying it to me, but he said it loud enough so the other guy can hear it. So now the other guy is actually thinking that I'm talking about him in the back.
That's weird.
That's hot. That's the hood, man.
Yeah, I know. I've been in situations like that.
You know what I'm saying? That's the hood. I'm like, I didn't say shit, dog. Why you say that? So now the guy is like, oh, you back there talking shit. Come on outside. In the hood, you got to make a decision. Basically, you can lose twice. If you don't go outside and fight, everybody going to think you a bitch ass nigga. Oh, he called you outside. You ain't going to do nothing. He called you outside. So now I got to make a decision. Do I go outside and fight? Or do I stay in this barbershop and just be, and everybody will start picking on me?
Yeah. Damn.
That's the type of shit you go through in the hood, man.
So what did you do?
I walked outside. As he turned his back. And I started walking behind him. And I closed my eyes and I just hit him.
No.
Yeah, and we both fell on the ground.
And you started wrestling.
Yeah, he started trying to go in my pockets.
Trying to take your money?
He tried to take my money, but it was over. They broke it up. But
you didn't want to do it, but you had to.
That part.
You didn't want to do it, but you had to.
That part.
And it was just dumb social credit. Social credit is what it was.
Stupid, man.
Yeah, and that's what gets people fucking killed or fucking in the hospital for no reason.
Exactly.
Now, the thing is that if you didn't do it, they would just bust your balls.
No, if you didn't do it, they'll bust your balls, but you still...
Other people are going to start flexing on you now?
Because, yeah, they'll try you.
Because they think you're a little bitch.
Exactly.
Damn.
That's the type of shit black men go through in the hood every day that people don't talk about it.
Yeah.
You see me? Just little stupid shit. Just little stupid stuff like that. You know
yeah,
what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's so many dudes in jail right now off of stupid shit like
off,
that, bro.
Off misunderstandings, bro.
Right.
Bro, I've been in so many fights because of a misunderstanding. Mm. Just, I heard you fucking said shit about my mom. And I'm like, I don't even know who you are. What the fuck are you talking about, bro? Wow. Why is this happening?
Wow.
But it's the same thing as that guy in the barbershop that said that fucking shit.
That instigated.
He just instigating it.
Right.
He just was, I'm bored today. I need to see some drama.
Boom, that part. And how many people do that every day?
I know, dude. For real. Sometimes people do it in comedy. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Oh, yeah. People will try to make you feel like shit about someone else on purpose.
Damn.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've received any of that type of like passive-aggressive hate that they try to give you. Right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like they come up to you like they're your friend. Right? And then they try to bomb you with all of their success.
Mm.
But they're not doing it as in like we're friends and I'm happy for you. It's more just like trying to like raid you and make you feel like I'm doing better than you, bro.
Yeah, that sucks, man.
It's like you can't even have a normal conversation with this person without them going, well, guess what I just booked? Well, guess what I just booked? You know what I'm doing?
Yeah.
It's just like, all right, dude, I get it, man. You know what I'm saying? This shit don't work to a guy like me because I see what you're doing. You know what I mean?
But, he said, I get it, man.
But to other people, though, people, man, they let that shit affect them and then they act on it.
Right. Yeah, I try to, because what they say, you know, be nice to the same people that you see going up, because when you coming down, you can pass those same people.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I always try to, celebrate and congratulate, and you know, that's what's up, man. Congratulations, bro. Keep going. I'm always sharing. Yeah. I share people pages and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
I do too.
People don't share my stuff. People don't a lot. Yeah. I don't get a lot of likes, but I do it because I genuinely like to show love.
Right.
I like to congratulate people. I like to support people, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I'm very competitive too.
Yeah. It's a delicate balance.
Yeah. You got to have a balance.
It's a balance. To me, it's like, you know, the emotion of jealousy. When somebody says, I don't get jealous, don't tell me that. That's bullshit.
Mm.
Everybody gets jealous to some point.
Right.
Or anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's what do you do with that energy?
Right.
That counts, right? The person that's the healthier version that ever gets any type of jealousy goes, why am I feeling like this? And if you look into yourself, you're like, you know what it is? I'm feeling like that because I need to push harder.
I need to get to the next level.
I need to get to that next motivation. Level, right? So to me, the majority of time when I see people that are like blowing up, man, I get inspired, bro.
Especially when I see like my brothers, black folks blowing up, because it's like, that let me know that, yo, y'all making room for me.
Yeah. They're making inroads for you.
Right.
Right.
It's letting me know that, okay, we being accepted. Okay, they like us over here. They like us over there. So, like, one of my goals is to, you know, go international.
Mm.
Do comedy international, you know? London, Dublin. Like, I never been to the UK.
Yeah.
I want to be able to do comedy all over. And Kevin Hart, a lot of folks broke that down for us to do that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I respect anybody that's paving the way, man.
Yeah. I same thing. Even me being Arab, like when I see anybody that's like, especially Yemeni people that are like pushing it, I love it, man.
Right.
Let me say, I don't get jealous. You know what I'm saying? To me, I just get inspired. I'm just like, this is amazing. I'm the type of guy, like if somebody crushes before me, I want to ride that wave when I get on stage.
Right.
Does that make sense? There's other people that will see that and be like, God damn it. And that's not to say that I have never had those feelings. There's days where sometimes you get up there, your energy's a little off, and then somebody like Trix will go up before you and fucking obliterate that room. And then you're just like, God damn it. I don't know if I have the energy for that shit.
But you know what? The way I look at it is that I never see it that way.
What?
Like wanting to ride the wave.
To me, I love it when people are crushing and crushing and every person is fucking like, and then like the person before me crushes. Now I'm like, yes, dude, this crowd is lit. Let's get up there and just ride that wave.
No, that's dope.
You know?
But so the way I look at it, like I want to create my own wave. You feel me? Like I want to create my own wave. When I go on that stage, this is me talking. Like, you can go on that stage before me, right? And you can like smack them in their face. Loud, it's crazy. It's like, oh my God. When I get on that stage, I want to create a whole different perspective. I want your energy.
I don't think the perspective has anything to do with what the way I'm talking about the wave is not necessarily, you know, any changing anything in me. It's just the energy in the room is great.
No, I do understand that.
You know, I'm excited to just ride that energy.
What I'm saying is sometimes I let that energy die out.
I do that too sometimes. Yeah.
Right. I want that energy to die. Sometimes I just want to get on stage and whatever you've seen before me, that's dope. Congratulations.
Yeah.
But I want to be so unique where you like you forgot about that other person. I bought you in my world. That's just how I view it.
Listen, I do too, man. Anytime I go up there, this is my time now.
Right.
You know, I'm a palate cleanser.
So, because some comedians will get discouraged. They will see somebody get on stage and like smash it.
Yeah.
And then when they go on stage, if they don't get that same energy,
yeah,
they feel like they failed.
Yeah, and let me tell you something. That's a very what you're saying right now is a veteran thing to say, right? You've been in the game longer than me, right? I'm only 6 years in, and I'm now starting to headline, and now I'm starting to realize exactly what you said. Energies are different. Don't sit there and put your energy and say that I have to match this energy, you know, and I am 100% with you, because when you are too concerned about those other fucking things, you fucked your own energy in that moment, and now your set's gonna fucking suck, Or if it doesn't suck, you knew you still could have crushed it if you would have been in the moment.
That's what I'm saying. Be in,
I'm right there with you,
your,
bro. So
yeah, be in your own moment. Like sure. I don't even. I congratulate you. That's so good shit. Good shit. But when I hit the stage, I gotta bring them into my world.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's.
And that's the thing, man. And I think that's a veteran thing to say, man. I'm talking about riding that energy and enjoying it. Like seeing mm-hmm. somebody in front of me crush mm-hmm. and be like, fuck yeah. But I'm not going to lie. There are days where I feel discouraged. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just being honest, man, because yeah. I'm still fairly new. Right.
Yeah, we are.
I'm now learning more and more to not worry about that. Like potluck at the comedy store. Uh-huh. Right.
Right.
Usually I'm like, oh shit, I got to fucking whatever, you know? And, this time I left my phone in the car on right. purpose because my phone, sometimes I do too much work on it mm-hmm. and then I'm not like in the right headspace. Does that make sense? Leave my phone in the car, went in the original room, watched every comedian, enjoyed sitting there.
Right.
And I relaxed, mm-hmm. like we were talking about, at peace.
Right.
And I literally said, I don't care how any other comic, Trix went before me. Trix is a murderer. Like, I don't care who goes up. I'm going to go up there and do my own thing and whatever. And I had a great set. It right. was fun. And it was one of those growth moments where I was just like, yeah, man, now I'm starting to understand.
It's not like that. It's not like that original room.
What?
It's nothing like that original room.
I know. But what I'm saying, I'm going back on what you're saying.
Okay.
And that is, yeah, don't let anything else discourage you. It's your time on stage. It's your energy. Bring them into your world and only be concerned about that. Don't be worried about what the guy did before.
Because we're all unique in our own individual selves.
Yeah.
And I realize once you find that uniqueness in your craft,
yeah,
that's what your audience and your fan base gonna pay for.
Sure,
they paying for you.
Yeah,
you got a thing that you do.
Yeah,
and that's what you do. If anybody try to come on and do what you do, it's not gonna happen for them.
Yeah.
They right. might get somewhere, but they not gonna go as far. Yeah. As you want to go.
In comedy is what we call finding your voice.
That part.
You know?
Yeah.
I like how every time you'd be like, that part.
Because it's real.
Yeah.
It's real. And I'm still finding my voice.
Yeah.
I'm still learning.
Yeah.
And I realize when you find your voice is when you stand true to your heart.
For real.
So that's what my comedy, I'm true to my heart, man. Mm-hmm.
There's more, I'm starting to learn that more and more, man. That now I'm starting to understand why it's important to just don't jump into your first joke. You got to sort of like say something to the audience, bring them in your world, so to speak, right? Because if you just get up there like the shit that I used to do when I was young, just go down and try to hit my first joke right away. And it just seems robotic.
But like I say, man, I can't. I know folks that go on stage and they do their first joke and they kill.
And I mean that works for me too. But right. I find when I connect with the audience now, it makes me more loose and relaxed.
That's the key part. Whatever you're doing is to connect. That then you winning. Yeah. That's it right there. You whatever you feel like you got to do to connect, and you true to it. Yeah,
you know, and it's just sometimes it's always something just very observational that I could do really quick and say something really quick, get the audience to realize that I understand the room that I'm in.
Right,
and then I can go into my shit.
You know? So do you do a lot of black rooms too? Or are you just predominantly a lot of white rooms?
Dude, I want to do more black rooms, but I do black rooms.
Okay.
You know, and black rooms are, especially when I'm in Detroit, I'm always trying to hit those black rooms.
I never performed in Detroit. I gotta get out there.
Dude, Detroit's a great place because the black rooms in Detroit are very cultured. Detroit is a place where it's like, so like for example, like if you do shows down in Atlanta,
okay,
there's certain black rooms that they call the Chitlin Circuit, where if I do the jokes that I do in that room, they're like, the fuck off the stage. They don't want to hear that shit. Do you know what I mean? They're not into finding out about my culture or all that fucking shit. They just want to hear everyday life fucking shit.
I did a show in Atlanta, and when I tell you, I went behind the best of Atlanta, though. My first week in Atlanta, and out of five shows, four was amazing. One was like, get off stage, nigga. So Atlanta, Man, I haven't seen so many black folks like that in a long time, man.
So many black folks in a city or like in like the shows?
The shows and the city, man. It was just because I've been out here. I've been in California since 2008.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So I've been here for a long time.
Yeah.
So when I leave here and go to like Atlanta, I'm like, oh shit, black people. It's real because our hair is all Mexicans, yeah, it's not like there's not a lot of black folks here, man.
Yeah. Well,
it's not a lot, bro.
No. There's not a lot in terms of like how you would feel like if you're in Philly or Detroit or
Atlanta. So when I get off the airport, I feel like I'm in motherfucking Wizard of Oz. It's like, black folks black folks working at Popeyes.
Yeah.
Black folks.
There's a Popeyes.
You know what I'm saying? I run right to it.
If you see a Popeyes, you know there's black people.
Right.
Bro.
Listen, when I tell you, bro, I'm talking about it's black folks working all through the airport.
Yeah.
And it's like amazing. That's Atlanta, it's like man. It's like Wakanda.
That's hilarious.
And I'm like, damn, this shit. I feel like I'm home, man.
You've been in LA too fucking long. I've been in this too.
So when I do a show in Atlanta, it's like even when I get my rental car, I put the music on. The radio station is like fucking dope.
I'm like,
Wakanda. I'm in it, bro. I'm listening to that motherfucking SWV. I'm chilling.
It's like you're in a black person theme park.
Right. So like, next thing you know,
you're like, this is great.
So I do a couple shows and it's right in, and it's like they want it in their face. It's in their face. Like it's the comedy jokes is in their face.
Yeah.
Like, yo, you better bring it. So I remember this one night. I was on fire. I did all these shows. I was on fire. But this one night, I go to a club. It's two DJs. There's a DJ in the front and there's DJ in the back. It's a lounge in the back and it's the comedy club in the front. So I'm like, damn, there's a lot going on in this damn club.
I think I might have been to this spot.
So when I tell you, I went up behind the best of Atlanta. Everybody that was good in Atlanta went up that night.
Damn.
So I got up. It was probably like 12, almost like 12.
Yeah, you're like towards the end.
I'm at the end.
The people are already exhausted.
I'm at the end.
Yeah.
Right before I go up, a girl get on.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell her name.
She bombed.
No.
Okay, good.
She got on stage and she started twerking. Big old booty. She twerking. Playing me, playing Cardi B. Cut it, DJ. Cut it, DJ. Stop it. Twerk. Play it again, DJ. So, a comedian got to go behind that shit.
Oh, she wasn't a comedian.
No, she is a comedian.
Oh, she is a comedian.
But she was using the radio.
Yeah, yeah.
The DJ was helping her out with the set.
I know, yeah.
So, now when you got a comedian that's just going to come on stage and without no DJ, it's like they ready to party now.
Yeah.
They in party mode. So that was a rough night right there, though. That was a rough
for
night.
You.
Yeah, that was a rough.
Night. So this was a fail.
Yeah. That was.
How did it go? How many minutes did you do?
I think I probably did like 7. They was like, "All right, nigga, come on, man."
Told you to get off the stage.
Yeah. It wasn't like get off. You're like, "All right, nigga, yeah." It was like, "Give me the light." Like, "All right."
They gave you the fast light.
Get off. Come on, they trying to party. So when you go up like 1 o'clock in the morning, man.
Yeah, bro, that's death. Especially if you are already in your head.
Yeah.
And a room like that will make you in your head.
Especially like, are you next? You next. All right, no, I got one more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, bro.
Man. I know what I'm going to do. He just came in. I'm going to put him up. Then I'm going to put you up. So now you got all that shit, but you still supposed to crush.
My biggest bomb ever was in front of an all-black room. Mm. I've told this story before, but I was very lucky that I was able to redeem myself in the same night. Cleveland Improv. I was opening for Damon Williams. And Damon Williams is fucking hilarious, veteran black comic, right? Mm-hmm. He brings all black room. I'm talking
Damon about, Williams, it's Chicago, right?
I believe, yeah, Chicago.
Yeah, I know Damon Williams.
You know
Damon Williams, yep.
Shout out to him, he's funny, man.
Legendary.
And he's a great guy. He's a good mm-hmm. dude, right? Mm-hmm. So I go to the Cleveland Improv. It was my first time at the Cleveland Improv, right? I was coming from Detroit, so I brought Arabic sweets. If I remember coming from Detroit, right? If I'm driving from Detroit, I always bring like some like, I'm hospitable. So I'm bringing like sweets, like Middle Eastern sweets. Brought them over there, made a good impression, right? First show, bombed. Bro, I bombed so fucking hard.
How many minutes you do?
Bro, I was supposed to do 25 minutes.
Oof.
I blew the light by 8-9 minutes.
Okay.
That's how hard I was bombing. Bro.
When you say you blew, oh, so you didn't even wait. Bro, you just got out of there.
Bro, I was chasing laughs. I've never bombed that hard in my entire life, bro. I'm talking about, I bombed so fucking hard, the table in front of me broke out into a spades game.
That's fucking crazy.
They busted out cards, they ignored me, and they just started playing spades.
Are you serious?
I swear to God.
This was what improv?
Cleveland Improv.
Cleveland, okay.
Cleveland Improv,
I'm always playing.
Bro.
What you got? What you got?
Bro. The air can, it was not hot. It was not hot in that room.
You was sweating.
I was sweating like it was 300 degrees up in that motherfucker, man. My hat was fucking soaked. Bro, you have no idea, man. I had the tunnel vision.
My hat is wet.
I was bombing. I had the tunnel vision where I couldn't see my periphery.
Right.
I was only focusing on trying to make somebody laugh. And then at the end, I did a joke, which is not a true joke, trying to chase one more laugh.
Right.
And it's a joke that you don't do in a black room. It's a joke about how I might have sucked a dick.
Oh, my God.
It's not real, right? And
hold on. So you said that, but it's not a real joke. You just made that up.
No, it was a joke that I was working on.
Okay, all right.
You know, the idea of the joke is that, like, I got a blowjob from a girl. I came in 15 seconds, and I thought she was a man. Right?
The fuck?
Right, because that's a real part. Like, this girl sucked my dick off. I came in 15 seconds, and I was like, yo, this is someone's dad. There's no way a girl can suck a dick that good. Plus, I was tripping on mushrooms, right? But hold on.
So you went to perform when you had mushrooms. You was on mushrooms.
No. This is like the real thing with the girl.
Okay.
But anyways, I do this fucking joke, right? It fucking bombs even harder. Not even is it so hard. The room groaned at me. Like when I hit that punchline that sucked the dick, the room went just like this. Durr. They were so mad that I said it because you don't do that in black rooms, right? And then this is the funny part. There's another part of the joke where I go, I'm not even gay. And some guy in the back goes, N-word, you gay. And the whole place, rah, fuck it. That's the only laugh I got. That's how hard I bombed, okay? Yeah. I got off stage. Bro, because I'm military, I forced myself to stay in the room while Damon Williams spent 30 minutes of his 1 hour set ripping my set apart.
Killing.
He had to.
He didn't have to.
But no, he had to. No. You don't understand. It was such an epic bomb, bro. That he had to. It was one of those things where he had to call it out, and he was just killing on it. So he just kept going.
Some people. I don't like when people destroy comics like that. But
listen, man, honestly,
that comes with the game.
The way I look at it is, if you bomb that hard, the other comics got to capitalize on it. You have to, because it's the elephant that's the pink elephant in the room. Everyone's got to. You got to call it out. So, anyways, this is what I'm proud of. We had a second show. I went back in the goddamn fucking thing. Restructured my set. I realized I forgot. Black crowds, you got to open up with a closer, bro. You got to open up with something that gets them laughing right off the top.
Yeah, they ain't got time.
But you know, black folks ain't playing with you. Too many white rooms, you forget.
Yeah.
Right? You forget. So I was lucky I had a second show, bro. Second show, bro, I fucking murdered.
Nah, that's dope.
The second show, I was so happy. I fucking murdered.
When I
got off the stage, Damon Williams fucking high five. He's like, that's how you do it, motherfucker. He met me in the green room and he told me afterwards, he was like, bro, after that first show, I was like, this is going to be a long fucking weekend. And then he said, he goes, when I saw you fucking pull it on the, after that second show, I was like, thank God. He goes, okay. Right. And then after that, I had no problem.
That's what's up.
But
that's what's up.
I was lucky I had a second show. Could you imagine going to sleep after that show, bro?
Hey, man, it comes with the game, man. I seen Aziz.
I'm sorry.
I seen him bomb at the improv. And D-Ray Mondays.
Oh, that's the hardest room in at the improv.
When I showed, he went on stage. This is Z's, and he fresh off of comedy tours and all types of shit. And he went on stage, and it was bad. I was sitting right there looking at it. It was bad.
Really bad?
It was bad.
How many minutes did he do?
I think he did his whole time.
Like what, 15?
15.
That's not that bad.
Yeah, but it was just like they was calling for D-Ray. It was crazy. And when he got off stage, he was like, I don't give a fuck. I'm rich.
Ooh, like, that made it
like,
even worse.
Like, I don't give a fuck. I'm rich. I'm good. But I respect him because he stood there and took it like a man.
Well, you have to.
And that's what makes you great, man. Just sit there and just like, you know what? Y'all motherfuckers can't hurt me.
Yeah.
So being a younger comic, watching that, I was like, yo. But I tell people,
if you want to be a great comedian,
yeah,
you got to make everybody laugh.
You got to make everybody laugh, bro. Amen to that.
You can have all the money in the world.
Yeah, bro.
But your true self is like, yo, am I really great?
And this is not to say every person laugh. You're talking about, because you can't make
not every person laugh. No, I'm talking about every different
demographics.
Demographic, yeah, different nationalities.
Can you take your jokes to Thailand? And people who speak English in Thailand laugh at what you're saying. What I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because wherever I travel, I try to find somebody doing comedy shows, and I do comedy shows there. So I've done comedy shows in Thailand, Cambodia, Indonesia, Palestine, fucking Israel.
Right.
But these are to English speaking people, but they're not from America.
Right.
They could be Indians that speak English or whatever. Mm-hmm. When you get a crowd like that, bro, you realize there's certain things you need to change and set up, right? Because there's certain slang that we use here that they don't understand there.
Right.
You got to explain that first before you even go into the joke. But then you learn what works, man. But you're 100%. You got to make everybody laugh. And I think in America, man, if you're a comic that doesn't do a black room or at least try to do them every once in a while, man, you're missing out, bro. Every black room I've done, I've always come out better, man. Sometimes I've done black rooms where, like that one where I bombed, bro, I came up with a local joke for Cleveland for the second show to fucking get them on my side. And that joke I take to every city now.
Wow.
All I do is just plug and play that city, and it works everywhere I go.
And you see how the universe just came and gave you that?
But that shit came to me because of how much it hurt, bro.
Right.
That fucking bomb, man.
Sometimes you gotta.
You learn a lot from
that bomb. That bomb will humble you.
And you learned a lot. You know, I learned how to play spades.
I don't know how to play spades.
You know what I'm saying? Big Mo, Little Mo. They were doing it in front of me. I was like, oh, okay.
Yo, that's fucked up, man. That's fucked up. First of all, why do they got cards in their purse, man? Like, that's fucked up.
I dissing, bro.
Who bring cards to the damn comedy show?
Black people, man.
That's fucked up.
Listen, because you know what? The thing is, man, when it comes to black people don't fuck around when they're coming out to have a good time, man. You know? Because the way black people look at it, you know, we paid good money for these tickets. Coming out to black people, coming out, going out is an event, right? For black people, it's we doing the thing that the girl's gonna get her hair done for 3 hours.
Yeah, you gotta be funny, man. You gotta be funny.
So what I'm saying is like
I'm gonna let you know. They not, especially when you go to little towns like that, Cleveland, those real towns, Atlanta, mother, they gonna let you know.
Because people,
Philly,
people,
New York,
they work hard for their money. And when black people are gonna spend money, they want to get what they deserve for that money, man. And
that's why I realized, I'm like, you know what? I had to stay south of it. Like when I started doing comedy out here, and I was always in Hollywood, Comedy Store, the Ha Ha, stuff like that.
Sure.
And I was like, nah, man, I'm missing something. Yeah. So that's when I went. I started hanging out at the Comedy Union. I went.
Comedy Union was great. I love Comedy Union. Yeah,
Comedy Union.
Man.
The J Spot Ends Mitchell, man. Shout out to Ends, my man.
I still haven't done the J Spot.
They closed down.
I know. I had never done that at all.
That was another show. That was tough. The J Spot every night. That was tough.
See, I wasn't doing black rooms out here.
The Sugar Shack.
I was going to Detroit a lot. You know?
Okay.
So I would get my dose of doing it out there, or if I hit places like Atlanta or whatever, you know. But are there any good black rooms out here now to work?
Man, you know what? No. That's the sad part of Hollywood, man. There's no black rooms, man. I was just talking to the guy.
It's Mun D Rays. That's probably.
Yeah, but that's still the improv. You know, I was talking to the owner of the Comedy Union today. And we was talking about how there's no black rooms out here for black comedians, man.
It's not just black comedians, but like I want to do, as a comic, I just want a black audience room.
But I'm talking about
predominantly black.
But that's what I'm saying. We need a black comedy club. We don't have that. Out here, you have West Side, you got the Laugh Factories, you got the Improvs, you got the Comedy Store.
We need something like what Nate Jackson did in Tacoma, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And then you got, what's the new joint on Lincolnshire? Comedy Chateau. There's not one.
Like,
and it's too,
all
and it's so. And listen, it's so many black millionaires now. So many black millionaires now, man. How come it's not one black comedy club in California?
It's probably
in LA.
It's probably like they don't want to. I don't know, man. Well, I mean, because you know you're going to be competing with a lot of all these other. I mean, the competition.
But that's it. Ain't about no competing. We got our own demographic.
But if you do like an all black comedy club, I don't think that's good for business overall.
Why not?
Well, because
you got all white comedy clubs, so why can't I have all black comedy clubs?
But they're not all white. They are
white.
Well, no, I mean they still have everybody.
Come on,
performing.
Let's be real. They white comedy clubs. You get black folks get one night, chocolate Sundays
or Thursday,
Monday D-Rays, or you get the belly room. So I understand the systems, but listen, man, we need a black comedy club in LA, man.
Yeah, well, I'm,
because it helps out everybody.
I'm looking at it from a business standpoint. So like, if you made a black comedy club, right?
Okay.
Okay. I don't know. I'm, because this is just me spitballing, right? As a business person, if you were to open a black comedy club or a comedy club that would just be a regular comedy club, which would draw more of an audience? You know what I mean? If you had, if you had like a comedy club that had like a, you know, a mixture of all kinds of different people that be performing on there, don't you think that you would end up attracting more?
Listen, what I'm saying. I'm not saying the comedy club is just for black people. I'm not saying that at all.
I mean, black owned
comedy club. Think about it. The J Spot, white folks came to the J Spot. White comics came to the J Spot. The Comedy Union, white folks perform at the Comedy Union. We do not have a black-owned comedy club in California. I mean, in L.A. right now. We don't have it.
So black-owned is one thing, but for me, black-owned, this is what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Black comedy clubs that are, sure, black-owned,
right?
But in areas that are predominantly, you know, have black people. Because
exactly.
The audience.
What you mean? We spend black folks spend money, man.
No, I know that. That's what I'm talking about. That's for me, I'm talking selfishly as a comedian. As a comedian, I would love to have a room out here where when you go there to perform, the majority of the people in the audience watching are black people.
Right. We don't have that.
They don't have that. I really wish it was, man.
And it sucks because we have so many millionaires out here that are African-American, and we don't have that one comedy club out here.
Maybe you'll be that millionaire next, bro.
I will.
Would you open a comedy club? Because I don't know if I would want to open one.
I will open up a comedy club. If I, you know, God bless me with the money, I will make sure I get the right people that
can run it.
That can run it.
Yeah.
You know, that can, look, I wouldn't be able to be there good every luck, day bro. And all comedy that, club, but I will, if God bless me with the right team that can set it up, I would love to have a comedy club out here because we're missing so much comedy. How you think I got where I'm at today? I didn't become, you know, funny by just being at the Comedy Store or just going to HaHa. I got my funny from being at the Comedy Union because I got to see my peers. I got to see, you know, my people.
But not only that, man, black people are not easy to make laugh, bro. I'm so sorry, but I think that's the thing. That's the thing, because this is my philosophy about black people, all right, in terms of like when you, as them as audiences, okay?
Right.
Whenever a comedian tells me, man, you know, black audiences, it's really hard to make them laugh. And you know what I tell them? I tell them, because black people are fucking hilarious, okay? The chances are you're probably going to get on stage and a lot of people in that crowd are either one, funnier than you, or two, very closely related to somebody who's fucking funnier than you. That's what I'm saying. So like the level of like the bar to crack a black room is much higher than a white room or a mixed room. You know what I'm saying? So to me, like performing in a black room is almost like you're running. Like if you're running up the Runyon thing, right? If you're running up the Runyon thing, a white room is just you running, right? But then a black room is you running with a bag full of bricks. Now you gotta. It's a harder room to crack.
Well, it depends on
the bar of what makes black people laugh is much higher. I think white crowds are very easy. They're much easier.
Well, I can't. I would say I will say you know, because I've done both. I do both, but black rooms, when white folks come, do you know anything about African Americans? Like people, like if you go to a black show, right? And say you white, you go to a black show. Okay. Do you know about African Americans?
Sure.
Do you know the culture? Or have you researched the culture?
Right.
You know, have you...
Can you connect with them?
Can you connect with them? Or matter of fact, instead of you trying to get on a black show, won't you come see a black show, be a part of the culture, see whatever black comedians is doing, you know?
But you don't think black rooms are harder?
Black rooms are harder. Black rooms are harder, but white rooms are hard too.
They can be, but I think the majority of them are not as hard.
No, it's because you identify with white humor. you are in, you perform mostly with white people, right?
Well, majority of the clubs I do, yeah.
It's white. So if a black, if
but I try to be hit those black rooms, man, because I love it.
But that's what I'm saying. So, if a black comedian, if all he done was all black rooms, if all he do is black rooms,
sure.
And they're like, all right, well, you're doing a Comedy Store main room at
I know.
8 o'clock.
You're 100% right.
Those guys,
it's almost a different language.
Yeah. So
you got to be able to mix the languages.
Right.
I know.
So same thing. A black person, what he should do is go to the Comedy Store, sit there and watch and see and just connect with the audience. See what's going on. See how they laugh.
I'd be doing that too, bro. Yeah. Same
so,
thing.
So, yeah.
I try to feel like what frequency is everyone on? Mm-hmm. You know, what's working? What's resonating?
Right.
You know, and what in my set I can like bring out. And I'm right there with you.
The difference between white and blacks audience,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
Black folks going to let you know when you fucking terrible.
Yeah.
White folks can be like,
that's what I'm saying.
We tried it. We try it again another day. Let's just try it again.
They play spades in front of me, bro. The table right there. Just pow. All right,
I cut a black guy hair and I fucked this guy up. And he'll let you know. I thought you said you know how to cut. Like, I'm going to cut you. Like, black folks will let you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when I messed the white dude hair up, he was like,
it's all right. Okay, no worries.
You know, we just try it again next time. I'm like, damn, that's it? You ain't going to stab me?
That's what I'm saying, bro.
Yeah, so it's a difference.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, back to what you were saying.
That's why if you make a black audience laugh, bro.
It's so powerful.
Bro, just let me tell you something, man. The majority of the rooms you do comedy, if you want to be doing a lot, the majority of them are not black rooms.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Okay. But bro, do you need to go to the black rooms to really find out if your shit's really funny or not, man? To me, that's why I love going to black rooms, because I would have to, the fear of not making them laugh would make me in the moment go, I know what I'm missing in this joke. Does that make sense?
Say it again.
Dealing with black rooms, you'll do the same joke that you'll do for a white room, and then be like, ha 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 ha. And then you'll do a black room and they'll be like, and then because of that moment, it makes me realize what I'm missing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then when I figure that out, and then I bring that same joke to another black room with the thing that I figured out.
Right.
Right. And I make them fucking laugh. Now that joke works even harder everywhere else, bro. Right.
Like y'all was talking before, y'all was talking about how, you know, comedy has changed a little bit as far as like you just being on stage, just talking to people.
Sure.
You're just talking. Not too many people can do that in a black room. Only people that can really pull that off is Dave Chappelle.
Mm-hmm. Well, because he's got the respect and the clout.
Exactly. Dave Chappelle is the only one that really can pull off. And it's yeah, man, you know. Not too many other black folks can do that, man. You got to bring it. They need some energy. They want to see you.
Movement.
Yeah, man. They want
to. Black rooms want to see you be emo. Like, they want to feel you feeling the joke. Mm. Like in a white room, you can just say the punchline and then the people will give you a laugh. In a black room, they want to see you feel the punchline.
Especially older folks. When you try to perform for older black people, older black folks, oh my God.
Yeah.
Because they didn't see a motherfucker. Who you think you is? Richard Pryor?
Yeah.
I didn't see Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
I didn't see Red Fox. I didn't see Bernie Mac. I didn't see every motherfucking body.
For real,
so who the fuck is you?
Yeah.
Make me laugh, nigga. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Like, all right, ma'am. Give me a minute.
Try doing it in these black rooms I've done in Detroit where they're eating dinner while you're doing jokes and shit.
Mm.
Man, they just start hitting their plates even harder. It's like, God damn, bro. They're just like, we're eating, okay?
Right,
fuck your fucking jokes, motherfucker.
Right.
All right, bro. We've been hour and a half.
Oh, shit. How long was the interview? How long was this for, man? It's supposed to be an hour?
I go by hour and a half.
Man, this is dope, man. I appreciate you, man. I appreciate the time, man. This is dope just to get the perspective out on, you know, just being a comedian out here, man. You know?
Usually I don't always talk about comedy, man. Sometimes we talk about other people's lives and shit like that, man. But for me, like, you got some really good insights. Like, we're on the same page on a lot of things, but, like, the way you described it was like, even when you said when you're at peace, I mean, that was like a very, very good point, man, because like when I really thought about it, it's like almost all those times where the ideas were coming to me, I had no worries.
Wow.
That's a very good point. That's powerful, bro.
Thanks, man.
That's powerful. And you make me want to fucking roller skate. Ah, damn, bro.
Mama, just don't play that music, motherfucker. Yo, man, it's Lionel Dalton, man. We out here, man. We live with my homeboy Mike, man. And hey, you gonna see a lot of me, man. A lot of me, man. Make sure you watch the movie One Night in San Diego, man.
And, One Night in San Diego on Hulu, right?
On Hulu right now.
Right, he's on Hulu now, guys.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I made Hulu. Yeah,
he made Hulu. And then what else? What else can you plug?
I'm working on my comedy special this year, so that's gonna be good. You know, I'm working on my comedy special.
How do they find you?
Lionel Dalton. Lionel Dalton. Just my name. Lionel Dalton. Instagram. Lionel Dalton. Facebook.
So that's like it's spelled for those of you who can't spell like me. It's Lion, and then E L L.
There it is. Yeah.
Lionel. That's Lionel Dalton, and that's what he's on Instagram. Is that you got a website?
No website.
That's you don't get a website. You should get LionelDalton.com, bro.
Okay, we're gonna get on that. That's in the works right now.
Yeah,
yeah,
guys, you know how to follow me, Mike from Detroit on everything. I'm going on tour. You can find my tour dates at MikeFromDetroit.com. I'll be in San Diego February 5th at the Mic Drop Comedy, and then I'm doing an East Coast thing in Baltimore, DC. I'm starting to book some stuff in New York, so definitely check me out there. And until next time, I love you, motherfuckers.
Public Yemeni number one.